Welcome to I Am, I Have, brought to you by Happiful Magazine and the Counselling Directory. This episode is with the wonderful Dr. Alex George. We talk about his new book, Live Well Every Day, his love of bath bombs and finding your own passion and purpose. We chatted a couple of weeks ago before his book was released, and we also discussed his role as the government's mental health ambassador and his personal experiences around mental ill health. We do talk about suicide within this podcast, so please be mindful if this subject could be triggering for you. Before we start today's episode, I wanted to encourage you to download the free Happiful app. With this, you'll be able to read daily articles, access Happiful magazine in its digital format, and search for mental health and wellbeing support in your area. Now, back to Alex. I hope you enjoy this conversation, and we'd love it if you could rate and leave us a review. It helps others to find us, and we read every comment you write. I'm so delighted to welcome Dr. Alex George. Alex is an A&E doctor, a government mental health ambassador, and the author of Live Well Every Day. Welcome, Alex.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to have a chat with you today, and quite excited as well to be sitting here and seeing sunshine out my window with lots of hope, I think, in days and weeks to come. So, yeah. I'm very happy.
That's so good. And we all need a bit of hope at the moment. And before we talk a bit more about that, I would love you to introduce yourself. Obviously, I've done the formal introduction. Why don't you tell us what you think people should know about you in your own words?
So hi, everyone listening. My name's Alex George. I was born in a little town in West Wales in Carmarthenshire. Lived very much in the countryside growing up, had that kind of upbringing, was very fortunate to enjoy a lot of playing in the fields and stuff. I went to university, studied medicine at Peninsula Medical School, which is a combination of Plymouth and Exeter, to enjoy the kind of Devonshire, Cornwall life for a few years, and then moved to London to work in A&E. And I guess people might know me best from being on the TV in the last few years and the work that I'm doing around mental health and other youth mental health ambassador. But I love cars and I love outdoors and I love sports and I enjoy people. So yeah, that's kind of a whistle stop tour of me.
Well, we're going to find out more, and we're also going to find out your love of self-care, and we might be talking bath bombs as well. So
yeah, that's good. That's good.
We'll get onto that later. But, you know, one of the things, your first I Am, which is I am an A&E doctor. Tell us about that and tell us how it's been for you.
Yeah, I mean, I always kind of wanted to be a doctor, I think, since I was about since I was about 13 or 14, I kind of watched the early days of City Hospital, the kind of first kind of examples, I guess, of 24 hours of A&E and that kind of thing. And I love the idea of combining that medicine, that the people, the adrenaline. I love that. And I'm quite a type A personality. I enjoy the thrill that comes with it. So I kind of got locked on into that when I was pretty young, started focusing my sights on that career. And as I went through med school, I always wanted to work in A&E. It's just such a fun place. There's a team atmosphere. Yes, it's very stressful, it's very pressured, but you really, really enjoy a sense of being with people. And I've loved working, you know, I've loved it. I've worked in Lewisham Hospital. I started actually King's College Hospital first for a year as an F1 doctor. I was an F2, a foundation year 2 doctor in Lewisham, and I've been there now for kind of 4 or 5 years. So really, really enjoyed that time. It's been quite an experience, particularly in the last year, ups and downs. But yeah, I'm very glad of my career choice, yeah.
I can imagine. And you said the last year has been full of ups and downs. I can imagine that everybody you work with has had a really, I mean, it's that terrible word, isn't it? Unprecedented time.
Yeah.
So yeah, how are you feeling moving into the future? And we just talked a bit about hope. How are you feeling in terms of hope for your role going forward?
It has been difficult times. I think we've all learned a lot about ourselves this last year. I think we've also learned a lot about mental health and well-being and looking after ourselves, and I think the spotlight of mental health has been huge, so that's why I've really taken such a focus on it. You know, I really wanted, particularly since losing my brother, to kind of do more to bring that spotlight around it. You know, for the last few years I've been working and talking around well-being and self-care. It's not something that's new to what I talk about, but it's something that I've become ever more passionate about, particularly in the recent times. So, you know, with this role, I hope that I can shed light, I can bring focus to mental health. And, you know, there's so many people doing great work out there, many of the experts, the charities, the organizations and stuff. So it's shining a light on the work they're doing as well, because the more we kind of build that attention, build that momentum, the more we'll bring, you know, positive change, we'll destigmatize mental health, and yeah, hopefully have some some brighter days, you know, to come.
And what you've just said about destigmatizing mental health, that's your second I am, which is you have a real determination around that. And there were a couple of things to touch on. I spoke about your new book, Live Well Every Day. And you talk about mental health quite extensively in that. And also that you're working with the government as a mental health ambassador. Tell us what you're aiming to do and also how this all came about for you in terms of writing the book and talking to people about everyday changes they can make.
I think that as I grew up, I felt that there was very little, if no, education around well-being, self-care. What is mental health? What are thoughts? How do you manage thoughts? How do you build resilience within yourself? How do you manage life's troubles? And I really wanted to, first of all, with the role primarily, to kind of help work on destigmatizing that conversation, bring it into normality, encourage these conversations at schools and focus on curriculum. But also, you know, with the book, Live Well Every Day, for me, it's not about a blueprint to happiness. It's not about this is perfection of how life is, and if you do this, you'll be forever happy. It's not about that. It's about giving people the tools, you know, in different areas of their lives that they may be able to take tips and things away from, that they may be able to make adjustments, small changes that might accumulate in being happier and healthier. So from purpose to and passion to sex and relationships to exercise to food, you know, it's making those small changes that do add up. And I found that in my own life, you know, especially with all the pressure, you know, and I do experience a lot of pressure at the moment. We talked about this. I think, you know, there's a lot of stress associated with this role. You know, looking after myself allows me to be the best version of myself. So I've learned how to do that. You know, things like going outside, having a walk, fresh air, natural light, exercise, all these things play a role into keeping me happy and healthy ultimately. So I want to give people those tools to do that for themselves and to learn for themselves, because some things might work for one person, might not work for another. But if that gets you on that journey of learning about yourself, then it's a good thing.
It's a really good thing. And what I love is that you are walking the walk when it comes to that. And we just had a conversation before we started today, because you posted on Instagram yesterday that you're going to take a week off because you need it.
Yeah.
And I think that was a really brilliant post for yourself, but also for other people, because I think there is a tendency for us all to believe that we can outwork or outlive a point where we need a break. And how are you feeling at the moment about needing that time out?
Yeah, I think we all do that. And I'm, you know, just the caveat, I guess, not the caveat, but the 22 is that I'm someone that's very driven, and I enjoy, and I really want to make progress. And there's a lot of things I'm passionate about, and I can have a tendency to overwork. So part of the self-care, which some people might think that's odd, you talk about self-care, but it's a lot of it's my awareness of that is exactly why I'm so focused on self-care being important, particularly for me, because I know I have a tendency to overwork. So when I've recognized that I've become stressed in the last few weeks, that I'm probably, you know, becoming, or, you know, at risk of becoming burnt out, is when I realize actually now I need to stop and take a week and just take some time. And that's what I'm going to do. You know, I've got a week where I'll, you know, be massively downscaling things I'm doing, just relaxing, going for walks, getting fresh air, and just having downtime, just complete downtime from all the stress of it. Because, you know, mental health is, you know, it's a very emotive space, and especially from my personal experience as well, and it can be quite taxing. You know, as passionate as I am about it, it can be tiring as well. So I hope that anyone listening to this, if you are, you know, noticing yourself, you're becoming stressed, you're just needing that break, take it, you know, because ultimately it'll make you better when you come back.
I think that's a really important thing for people to hear, and it's a really important thing for you to do. You know, we were just talking about the fact that you're an A&E doctor, and there's a lot of pressure there. I can imagine that's very adrenaline fueled, and then with all the other things you're doing as well.
It can be a lot sometimes. It can be a lot, but I love what I do, and I know that I'll come back itching in a week's time to get going again. But I recognised it myself, you know, and I think it was important in that post. I like to be honest with people, my followers and stuff. I don't pretend to live any particular life. As I experience life, I'll share that way. I'm not going to filter life in that, you know, in a way to just show the perfect sides of things. It are really tough days. I have really hard days, you know, and I'm honest about that.
Thank you for being honest about that, because I think that's a massive move in destigmatizing mental health, is just being honest that we all have our ups and our downs, and sometimes the downs last a bit longer and we need to take some time out. And your next I am actually leads on beautifully, is that you're relentlessly passionate about self-care. Now tell us about this, because I love this subject, and also I've loved following some of your posts on this, but I'll let you tell us more.
Again, it kind of comes from, you know, learning. When I was at university, I went through a time where I kind of lost myself a bit, and to be honest, I I'd stopped going out walking. I wasn't exercising. I was eating badly. I was sleeping badly. I wasn't talking to friends. I'd lost interest in my studies. And basically all the things that anchored me, made me feel good and feel whole, I'd kind of lost. I'd lost my way a little bit. And I kind of stopped and I spoke to my family and said, you know, I'm not feeling myself. And we kind of worked out, well, you know, are you doing the things that usually you enjoy? And I said, well, no, I don't. And I integrated again. I thought, well, actually, I'll walk every single day to get fresh air. I'll have a bedtime and a getting up time. I'll start cooking my own healthy meals and try and enjoy cooking. I'll start exercising a bit as well. And as I started putting in these kind of points, I actually noticed a few weeks later, I was feeling better. And the more I did it, the more, you know, the better I felt. And I realized that actually, how could I expect myself to feel good if I'm not actually taking care of myself? You know, you're asking yourself to work on empty, to run on empty. You know, you're not topping up that kind of reserve. So in the recent years, I've really focused on that a lot. And if I'm ever feeling a bit off or not myself, then I turn back to those things and go, well, Alex, are you actually doing the things that those anchors that will actually keep you feeling good? And it's not just for people going, well, actually, you know, that's only for, it's not only for people who might think, well, you know, I'm feeling bad, I need self-care. Self-care is for everyone. And if you're feeling good, it's what keeps you feeling good as well, if that makes sense. So, you know, and if you see on my social media, I go on about going out for a stomp and a walk. And it's been amazing actually seeing people tag me and share on their stories. I've seen, you know, it's hundreds, if not thousands of people a day tagging me saying I'm out for a stomp, I'm out for a walk. And it's brilliant to see that, because if I can encourage other people to look after themselves, then, you know, that's a really positive thing, you know, for me to hopefully do.
Does it help you to get messages from people when they're sending you messages saying they're also looking after themselves? Because, I mean, we talked about your job earlier on in the book and everything, but in a way, social media itself is quite a commitment of time. And
It is. Anyone thinks that social, you know, running a platform of nearly 2 million is like a walk in the park. It's not. You know, it's a full-time job in itself. There's a lot of business accounts with less followings that have full teams running it, you know, and it's just me. It can be a strain itself. But no, I get real positivity seeing other people living what I'm talking about and experiencing that for themselves. That lifts me and it drives me to keep going. It doesn't mean that sometimes I don't get fed up with social media like we all do. And I think coming offline, sometimes I came off for three weeks or 4 weeks in the summer. I think that's a good thing. Certainly in the next week, yes, I will be online a bit, you know, sharing some things I'm doing around self-care. But I'm not going to be pressured to do that. I'm doing it as I want to. If I don't want to go online for a couple of days, I won't. And I think that's important as well. So, and not just for people, I think, well, that applies to you as someone who's got a big following. I think that's whether you've got 100 followers or 1 million followers. You know, you can choose to not engage with it, not go online, to stay off your phone, just have some time off social media, because it is a very powerful thing. And there's things you can do really good with. And I think you can share a sense of community, but also can drain people as well and can make you feel bad. So just reflecting on that and being aware, I guess, is quite important.
And it goes back to what you were saying about turning back into yourself and thinking about those things that really feed you and give you kind of passion and make you feel well. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about what you have in your book. So you talk about passion and purpose in your book, and I think this feeds into self-care as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think passion and purpose is very important to who we are and to making us feel like we have a place, you know, and that we have a role to play. To have a story to live in a way. And take, for example, you know, for me, you know, I when I was younger, I was quite passionate about science. I loved learning about science, about facts about the human body. And I really just enjoyed, you know, the act of learning about that. And so, you know, I put together a few of my interests and I thought, well, I enjoy science. I also like people quite a lot. You know, I enjoy the kind of adrenaline buzz of things as well. So why don't we just see what kind of works out? And I found that medicine and that healthcare, that being a doctor, was something that ticked those boxes. And that gave me a real purpose, because I felt, well, I have a direction. I know what I want to do. And it doesn't mean that people, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to be set on one thing or you have to just suddenly decide to be a doctor and that's it. It can be anything in life. It can be smaller things as well. And, you know, you might look at yourself and go, well, actually, what do I enjoy doing? I enjoy painting, or I enjoy arts and stuff like that. And, you know, well, you know, why didn't you have a think about what you can do with that? You know, is it that you want to dedicate more time in your week to actually following those passions? And those give you that sense of purpose. You know, you might end up joining an arts club and be painting with other people and form a community. You might make a business out of it, you might not. And that's important to say as well. It's not about your career. And I think purpose doesn't have to be about your career. You might have a separate role that you do, but your purpose in life could be completely unrelated to what you do in terms of income and working. But I really wanted to help people have a think about that and stop and, you know, even write a list about all the things they enjoy, things that make them tick, things that make them smile, what makes them happy, and think, well, actually, are you spending time doing those things? You know, and what could you do that loops those things together? Because a lot of us, I think, can, a lot of us, when we lose our sense of purpose, it's often because we've lost our way and stopped doing the things that we really enjoy.
And we've stopped tapping into ourselves. And it's my favourite part of the book. And actually, it's a really nice self-care thing to do in itself, is to go somewhere and just go through those questions and really think about, you know, what is it? Yeah. What do you love? What are you passionate about? Really recommend checking that out. But you are also a man who loves a bath bomb. Tell us about this.
I love it. Again, it comes down to, you know, where the bath bombs all started. You know, I've now launched a company. I've got Prescribed, which is my bath bomb company. I'm very proud of it. But it actually all started through self-care. I mean, one of my very good friends is a nurse at Lewisham Hospital. She said, look, you're working so hard, you need to chill out a bit, like, you know, have a bath bomb, relax and stuff. And she brought me, and I did like bath bombs anyway, but she brought me in a bath bomb to try. I said, look, try this one and chill out and stuff tonight. So I did, and I put the bomb in and I relaxed, and I thought, oh, this is brilliant, I really like this. I thought, go on, I get back into this and start buying some bath bombs. And I took her some, and we each used to buy and treat each other to bath bombs. And I thought, oh, this is brilliant, like, I really love this. I'm passionate about this. Like, I'm actually genuinely passionate about bath bombs. So I thought, well, why not start a venture around it? So that's where that was all born. And, you know, months down the line, I've just had the launch of Prescribed, which has gone down amazingly. And I think I've really focused on the things that were important to me. It's, you know, it's 100% vegan. I wanted to make sure we weren't using plastic in it. It's cruelty-free. The products were nice. It's funny because I have a checklist when it comes to bath bombs. It can't be slimy in the bath. I don't like, that's horrible when it's really slimy. I don't like glittery bath bombs because then it gets all over your body and the bath. And it cannot stain the bath, very importantly. So I make sure that none of my bath bombs do that. But yeah, no, it's been really fun. And I think it's a really good thing to say. And the point from that to say is that it's perfectly okay. In fact, I think it's really good to have outside interests and different things that you're interested in from. You don't have to go, well, this is where I've set my life and it's going this direction. I can't go left and right. That's not true. You can follow whichever direction you want. And I think having a purpose, going back to that point, purpose and passion, it doesn't have to be a lifelong thing. We all, you know, life's a journey, and you might decide to go in a different path, and your purpose and passion when you're 15 could be completely different to when you're 25, which could be completely different when you're 35. It's just about following your interests and your instincts at that time, really, isn't it? But, you know, as I said in that chapter, and when you go through the book, have a look at questions at the end, because I try and provoke people's thoughts, I think, a little bit, and challenge a little bit as well to think, well, what makes you tick?
What you've just said about it doesn't have to all be about your career. It's important to have stuff outside of outside of what's expected of you, I guess. Yeah,
absolutely.
Because, you know, you're an A&E doctor, you're working around mental health. And like you said, that can be very taxing. We talk to people every day who work in mental health and the industry and in terms of supporting other people. And if you're talking about that 24 hours a day, that can be very, very heavy.
Absolutely.
So it's
absolutely
important.
Can. I think that's what I'm experiencing. Yeah. I think it's very important. And having, and even when it comes to your career, I mean, it just so happens that my purpose and passion was a career, but it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be at all. It can be completely separate. And I think that's vital as well. But yeah, and just have outside interests, you know, follow your interests, make sure you're doing what you enjoy.
And you said you love cars as well. Tell us about your
love of cars. Yeah. My granddad used to race. He used to race scramblers at first and motocross. And then he went on into go-karting. Actually won the world championship in go-karting 1 year. He used to race with the previous Formula One world champion, Nigel Mansell, was very famous in the Formula One's kind of circuit. But, you know, it's in the blood, really. So my dad loves cars as well. I love Formula One. I love the cars and stuff. And I love, having that interest. Nothing to do with health. It's completely opposite. But it's something I enjoy and it makes me tick. So, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with that. You might have a set of interests that are completely opposing from each other. And I do, really. How does bath bombs, cars and medicine fit? You know, maybe the bath bombs, you can certainly look at that for self-care. But, you know what I mean? It's all very different. But I think that's fine.
But we're all multifaceted human beings. And in a way, this is what this podcast is about. We can be categorized at certain things or experience certain mental health challenges. But that's not all we are. We're all a ton of different things. And that's okay if they're opposing. You know, if one day you're driving at speed in a gorgeous car and another day you're you're bath bombing, you know, it's you can be both things. And also I think as a man as well, there's self-care and men isn't spoken about as much as women in self-care, I believe. So I think it's important to have those conversations and say, you can have a really nice bath.
Yeah, I'm determined to get more men bath bombing. I'm determined, it's my mission to try, you know. And I think more will. It's interesting, I've had friends who've said, well, actually I never tried it before, I love it now, and they you know, and I'd love that, it'd be fantastic, you know. There's no reason why everyone can't enjoy.
We all need a moment to pause and just
we do
relax sometimes. I'm going to move on to your I have, and your I have is, I have experienced firsthand what suicide can do to a family. Tell us more.
Yeah, it's been a tough year. I mean, I've been kind of campaigning, working in this mental health space for a few years, and the last thing you expect is to see on your own door. Well, in a funny way, in a lot of ways, what you should expect, having worked in mental health, that it can affect anyone, but it's still a shock when it does. And you know, my little brother took his life in the summer. He's supposed to go to medical school in Southampton, and he had his whole life ahead of him. So it's been very, very difficult, kind of last 7 or 8 months now. But it's one of those things in life where there's no caveating, or there's no way to kind of put it in a box where it's okay. You just have to learn to live with life. You've got to learn to grieve, learn to, I guess, deal with an acceptance of what's happened. You know, we've had to knit together as a family, look after each other. I think we're getting into a better place now, and you know, a lot of the work I'm doing does help, because obviously you'll feel like you're doing something positive, but you know, the pain will always be there. You know, it's never a day that it's okay, you know, that it'll be like that for the rest of my life. But unfortunately, it's a scar I'll have to live with.
And you talk about it very openly, and have you had time to grieve, or do you feel like that will be something that will come later down the line?
I think yes and no. I think everyone's different, and everyone's experience of grief is different. And some people don't overtly grieve for a long time, or they might deal with it their own way. And I think, you know, as long as that way is healthy, inverted commas, or you're trying to deal with it in positive ways, then that's good. But I have been. I think the first month was a huge shock. I think it's hard some days. Some days it's harder than others. You know, kind of his birthday's passed and stuff like that, and things like that are very tough. But you know, it's one of those things in life. We've got to get on with it. To put it brutally, we've got to find a way to live with it, because that's what I've got to do.
And are you bringing that experience, that first-hand experience, into the work you're doing with the government?
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of the reason, obviously, I'm in the role is partly because of my platform, but also my personal experience. And I hope that, you know, what I can do is shine light on how important this is and how much it can devastate families. You know, there's a lot of people out there that are struggling with their mental health, and we want to make sure we're helping them.
And you said at the beginning of this conversation, we were both talking about looking out the window and the sunshine being out. We were talking about hope. And do you have hope that the government, and also after the pandemic, there's going to be much more focus on mental health and the important role talking about it has?
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. I think the public wants to see change. The government, I think, have to recognise that. And there's now been this 500 million that's been allocated further to certain sectors, which are quite important. And you know, it's just definitely a start. There's a lot of work to be done. A lot of that work's around destigmatizing and around self-care and those things. So it's going to be a journey. I don't think these things get fixed overnight. It's very unusual for things that are so deep-rooted that need sorting to be fixed overnight. But I do feel we're making positive steps, and in time we'll get there.
That's great. And Happiful, one of the things that we're looking at is, as people start to emerge from lockdown, what people might need help with on a very, you know, just on a very day-to-day basis, in terms of what people might want to hear about. And we're hearing a lot about people experiencing anxiety and panic attacks at this time, because we've all been told to stay indoors and be careful and look after ourselves. And now there's this kind of slow emerging. Would you have any kind of words of, I guess, experience for people who are feeling that kind of anxiety about re-emerging into the world after COVID?
I think the most important thing is, don't push yourself, don't rush, take your time. Everyone's different. Some people will just re-emerge and they will carry on. Other people might find it more difficult, and I think that's okay. I think we're all different. We're all human beings. We're all individual human beings. And I think just take your time. Like, I'm personally quite anxious about going to busy places. I'm not someone who'll be, I don't think, rushing back, you know, to busy environments. I am looking forward to going to the pub with my friends, but I certainly wouldn't want to be in a busy place that wasn't controlled. So I would say small steps, you know, do what you're comfortable with. Don't feel pressurized by anyone, you know, or feel that you should have to just go back to normal, because actually we have experienced something that's life-changing, really, isn't it? And that for some will take a while to get to kind of get over, or get over isn't the right word, because you shouldn't get over necessarily, but for people to accept and move on from, in a sense. So take your time, you know, speak with people, share with people how you're feeling, have very honest conversations with people. If your friends say, "Oh, I really want to go to this place," we'll say, "Actually, you know, maybe we could do that in a few weeks. Could we go and sit in the park or something at first, and build up to maybe going to a pub?" It's whatever people feel comfortable with, but you know, listen to yourself and how you feel.
You're so right. And I think we're all going to have honest conversations with each other, because everyone's going to move at different speeds, like you said.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
it'd be nice to go to the pub with friends, but I don't necessarily want to go. I don't want to go on a tube for a very long time. I don't want to.
I set your own boundaries. Everyone's allowed to have their own boundaries, and be very straight about your boundaries. You know, it's what you feel is justified. It's just, so, you know, stick with that.
That's great advice. Thank you so much. And I'm going to ask you the final question, which is leaping from this summer and going to the pub to 10 years from now. So if you could meet yourself in 10 years, what do you hope your 10 years older self would say to you right now?
That I hope that he would say, in 10 years time, would say that, you know, what you're doing right now is what it will make a difference, that the work you're doing, you will help people, because it can be hard living it day after day, but that hopefully this battle, not battle, it's not the right word, I guess, but the struggle in some sense, you know, this kind of work and, you know, the kind of change that we're hoping to make, that this will be really worth it and we can actually make a difference. If I knew that, that would be very helpful. I think we will see that. I'm seeing this positive coming out of it, but it'll be lovely, you know, in 10 years, hopefully, to look back and go, do you know what, we did some really great work.
100% sure that's going to happen, and you're doing great work with everything you're doing and your book. So tell us again the name of the book, and also where people can find you and it.
So my book is Live Well Every Day. You can find it in a lot of the high street stores, I believe Waterstones, WH Smith, online as well, just have a little search. And you can find more about me on my Instagram. It's at Dr. Alex George. And if people would like to try the bath bomb, they can head to at We Are Prescribed, and we drop the E. We Are Prescribed on Instagram. And yes, we're donating a percentage, a donation from every bath bomb to Young Minds as well, which is very important to me. So it's nice to do. I'm excited about the brand. I love the brand, but it's also to support, you know, charities that are doing incredible work as well.
And they are doing incredible work, as are you. And it's Thank been you. So Yours. Lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to I Am, I Have. Don't forget to download the free Happiful app, and I'd really love it if you could rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast too. Before you go, I wanted to let you know that on the Happiful app, we have information about where you can find mental health support, including the counselling directory. If you need immediate help, Samaritans are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on 116 123, or you can email joe@samaritans.org. Help is available. This podcast is hosted and produced by me, Lucy Donahue, for Happiful. I hope you'll listen again soon.